Started. It's 3:15 on my watch. We got lots to cover. Well, welcome to this session, to a very exciting session today where we have Kyle McLennan from the Game Studios team, the Microsoft Game Studios team, who's going to share a little bit about how Application Insights helps their services stay available, performing, and succeeding. By way of introduction, my name is Vlad Joanovic. I'm a program manager at Microsoft on the Application Insights team. Been at Microsoft for quite a while, started in the Windows 2000 team working on WMI as part of Windows 2000 and Windows XP, and moved into the IT space and spent almost just over a decade on the System Center side of the business, MOM 2000, 2000 SP1, 2005, all the way to 2012. And just around a year ago, as we were looking to develop a sort of a SaaS offering or take what we've built on-premise and really make it even easier for developers to adopt a service or a system like System Center, a small group of us moved into the developer organization at Microsoft, and we're building what's now called the Application Insights Service that we're going to talk about here today. And I'm going to figure out how to switch slides. So we're going to start off talking about what is Application Insights, why we think it's useful for your services and devices. And this, the focus of this session today is really on the performing side. How do you understand if your services are performing? We'll touch a little bit on device performance, and then there's an available session tomorrow, and then yesterday Brett's session covered sort of the succeeding part. And we're going to spend most of the time talking about this performing segments or the sort of APM aspect of Application Insights through the lens of one of our internal customers, Game Studios, and really see sort of end-to-end how they onboarded at App Insight, how they use App Insight, and how App Insight is a key portion of their entire application lifecycle now today for Kyle's and Kyle's team. And along the way, we'll talk about some of the alerting feature capabilities we have, the dashboarding capabilities. We'll have lots of resources, and sort of we'll summarize how you can take all of this back to your corporations. So Application Insights, as I said, is a service. It's an online service. It doesn't exist on-premise. The data from your applications does need to flow to a service. Today, that service is visualized in what's called Visual Studio Online. This is something that you can create a free account for. It used to be TFS Online. Last November at the Visual Studio launch event, it got rebranded as Visual Studio Online. This is where you can create team projects, do builds in the cloud, do load testing in the cloud. To use Application Insights, you don't need to have any of the team project in the VS Online service. You could still be using TFS on-prem or some other system for storing code and building code and tracking work items. So there's no dependency for there. Clearly, there will be more integration between those, but right now there's no dependency. And then over time, and if you saw some of the build keynotes or some of the build announcements, you'll see more of the Application Insights features appearing in what's called the Azure Portal Preview. This preview where you have the ability to create team projects, Azure websites, and have some of the Application Insights capabilities right in there. Now, there is an integration with Visual Studio. There is a V6 release so that you can automatically add Application Insights to projects from Visual Studio, either if you're doing a file new project or for existing projects. And then really you want to think about Application Insights helping you on three vectors. Helping you reduce the time to detect problems, making sure that your app is available, and if it's not, reducing the time until you find out about the problem. And that's really the focus of tomorrow's session. Also, if you do have a problem, how do you reduce the time to detect what the problem is? How do you find what that root cause is? How do you drill back to code? How do you understand if it's your code or your dependencies or potentially your infrastructure so that you can actually resolve those problems? And the third area, and this was more the session focus yesterday, was how do you understand if your application is successful? How do you understand if your users are getting through the funnels that you've identified? How do you understand if users are trying out these new features that you're adding to the product, a new button here, a new option for achieving a transaction? So Those are the ways to think about it. You can monitor apps really anywhere. They could be running on-prem. They could be running in Azure. They could be running in Amazon. They could be running underneath your desk. They could be running on your machine as you're clicking F5, as long as that data can flow back to the central App Insight service. And if you want to think about the sort of different telemetry that's generated for an app, I think of it this way. On the sort of left-hand side, we'll talk on tomorrow's session all about what web tests create, and Kyle will show us a little bit of his web test today. What you can do with simple URL pings or more complicated web tests. There's data that can be generated from the browser if your app is available in a browser, and your app can generate data from a server. And a lot of the server data is generated by an agent that we'll show you how to install today, how to configure, how to think about. And I've tried to color code things into things that are sort of easy to configure, just a few clicks, likely not an intensive code effort to do, and then sort of some changes that will require a little bit more work. And the focus for today is really sort of on these four areas in server. Now, Kyle will show us sort of everything that he has, from the web test side all the way through the server side. He doesn't have some of the browser side pieces, but this is the focus for today. And then sort of just to kind of complete the picture on the device side, right now there's sort of some default telemetry that gets exposed from different device apps that you add our NuGet packages to, and then you could add a lot of custom events for custom tracking, and right now more performance needs to be added, more columns under the device side. So I'm going to demo essentially two scenarios quickly before we bring Kyle up here, and that's really just on the getting started. I'm going to show you how to get started from Visual Studio, some things that extend from where Brett showed yesterday. We're going to add App Insight to an existing project that we created, an existing ASTP.NET project. We'll look at some of the things that it did, and then we'll talk about how to actually install this agent so that you can get the server-side piece. That's one way to get started, and if you can change your app's project, if there's a Visual Studio project for your app, that is definitely the best way to add App Insight to it so that your developer can use and send telemetry from the Visual Studio console right into the App Insight portal so they can view it, they can debug it, and really the transition is to make App Insight sort of an ambient part of the development process, the entire application lifecycle. It's not just about monitoring the app when it's in production. It's about using the same tools throughout the development lifecycle. So if it's you're running a perf test, if it's sort of just debugging locally, using the same data set to help help the developer be successful and make sure available performing and succeeding. So we'll also show the other option that if you can't change the project, how do you just remote to a machine and install App Insight there locally today? And today that does require a server-side installation, a download of an MSI that gets run locally, gets executed, you add a little config file over it, and then it starts monitoring that app and sending all that device, that instrumentation, all that discovered information to the App Insight service, and then you can view it into the portal. So we'll demo those quickly today, right now, and then we'll switch into what Kyle can do. So from the Visual Studio perspective, here's a project that already exists. It doesn't have Application Insight added to it. I can right-click on it and add Application Insights to the project. This is where you can download the V6. It's just search for Application Insight tools. There's also a reference at the end of this deck on where to get that link. So I'm going to right-click, click Add Insights to the project. I choose the Visual Studio account. Clearly, over time, this may be an Azure subscription. This will create a new component, a new app in Apps Insight called TechEd, and really just think of this as a container for all of that telemetry data that's going to be sent. It's going to be stored in a container called TechEd, and we'll click Add. This downloads some NuGet packages. There was a question yesterday if you have Visual Studio 2010, this extension only works in 2013. You could manually download those NuGet packages. And you can see here it automatically added an App Insight config file. And this config file has all the detail required for this app to now start sending telemetry data to this App Insight service. And on the recording, if you write down that key or this account ID and I forget to reset it after this session, I'll be I'll get a few presents in my application, in my sort of container set that could be your data if you use my keys and not your own. You shouldn't share those license keys as I clearly am. Now, there's also links here to get to that. Now, if I run locally, the telemetry data will start being sent, and that's what Brett showed yesterday. One of the things that I want to show next is if you deploy this app, and I already have an app that is over here that's deployed. That App Insight config file will flow with the app, and in this case, the app that I have on this machine that I'm remoting into doesn't have any of App Insight. It wasn't added through the Visual Studio piece, so it doesn't even have this App Insight config file there. What I'm going to show is essentially how to monitor a particular existing app that is already running on a server. And now we'll get into some of the server-side piece that Brett's session yesterday didn't get into. So in this case, I have an app. It's running over here. And part of this is going to be similar to what you have to do if you do deploy an app from Visual Studio that has it. The agent is the same. This agent, before I get to the agent, let me drill into the App Insight thing. That's the Visual Studio account homepage. And I'm going to go to the application view. And on the application view, I'm going to create a new app. Actually, let me go to the Add App Wizard here. I would like to collect data from a server component. Yes, it's a .NET app. We do support Java apps. I'll show that a little bit later. I want to collect performance data from it. And my app does happen to be running in Azure as a virtual machine. So I've sort of finished our Choose Your Own Adventure Wizard. And now I'm going to name it Vlad's Demo. I'm going to create the app. This, again, is now doing the same exact sort of create container step that happened from Visual Studio, but this is doing it from the App Insight service. And now it gives me the option here of downloading this config file. So I'm going to save the config file just to my download directory. And what I have to do with this config file is I actually have to put it in the applications directory near web, in the same directory as webconfig. So I go to my prod instance that I want to monitor. I drop the App Insight config file here. Then the next step that it says is download and install the Microsoft monitoring agent. I'm going to download the 64-bit agent, and I'm just going to run it here, and we'll go through what this looks like. Now, this is called the Microsoft monitoring agent. It's the same agent that some of you may have experience with on the Operations Manager System Center side. It is now a common agent between the two products. And if I choose next, this is a pre-release version of that agent. Question over there?
If you have that already installed,
yeah, great question. So eventually that was the goal, that agent would just be there with System Center. The question was, is if that agent is already there, would it just work out of the box? Right now the answer is no, because we're using a pre-release version that is only the version that works with App Insight. Right now, the version that exists there in the box could be a 2007 R2 version, could be a 2012 version, could be some version of UR2. You get the different versions there. Now, if you want to use App Insight on an instance that already has a System Center agent there, you first have to uninstall this one, just because we don't support upgrade, because we don't want you to by accident break it. Then you run this setup the exact same way I'm showing here, and you'll see on this next tab is where I choose where I want to connect to. So let me zoom in. Oh, man, because I'm not maximized here. Let me do a little bit of gymnastics so we can zoom in. No, come on, zoom doesn't work. I got to do the right button. There we go. So there are three options: Visual Studio Online Application Insights, System Center Management Group, or a third option that just sort of puts the bits there but doesn't connect them to either. If I have a desire to connect this particular server to a management group, maybe because it was already running one, and it could still connect to a 2007 one or a 2012 one, I'll choose both of these options. In this case, I'm just going to choose the Visual Studio option, and the only difference with the wizard is if I choose the System Center option, it asks me to write in the management group name and some of the other port details, and it'll start reporting in there. If it didn't exist before, it'll be a new agent, a manually installed agent, just the same way as before. So let's click next on this. Click next, and that's pretty much it for the setup. Setup will continue, and what's going to happen after this is all the the applications that I've configured through this App Insight config file to be monitored are essentially going to start reporting to the App Insight service. If I'm connected to a management group, all of the MPs and all of the other operations manager processes and tasks will still continue to execute, but it's one agent. It's one Windows service that's sort of shared between between the two. And what you'll see us move to more and more over time, is, and you'll see partly the config you notice got there with, or could get there with, a Visual Studio deploy of the app, but the agent still needed to be installed. And I think more and more over time you'll see as much of as is possible being added to the app, so that the app monitoring settings for the APMs piece of it and the availability usage side over time really flow with the app, so that you don't require some server-side step, some separate install to sort of process that app. So I'm going to click Finish on that, and then as you saw it, I have to do an IIS reset. You can see I was testing things before. There's a version of the agent that probably by the time you do the same thing at home, there'll be a little checkbox in the setup that says, just restart IIS for me. And as long as I have the App Insight config file in the right place, this app will start reporting. And I'll just show you a few pieces of this before we switch to Kyle. So under servers, you'll see a new machine. It's called AI Demo Vlad J1. You see it stopped reporting just before. That's the last time I practiced. You'll see if I refresh this, it'll start to go green, meaning the server is sending data to the App Insight service, but no app yet. And we'll eventually see an app started to be discovered. Oh, actually, forgot one major step. I have to actually put some load into the app so it actually wakes up and starts sending data for the app. But the server heartbeat stuff should be coming any minute now. So now you see that the server is starting to heartbeat, sort of last server report time is recent, and eventually we'll see that app that I called. I can't remember what I called it. Vlad's demo or something. Let me just take a quick look. I can't remember what I called it. It was a Vlad's demo, thanks, God. So eventually we'll see Vlad's demo. There it is, last one. Eventually we'll see data start to report for this, and you'll see the last report app time. If you're ever in doubt, or if you're ever trying to troubleshoot sort of why an agent isn't reporting, it's the same operations manager event log that you may be familiar with. Is that a question in the back? If I had a SCOM, the question is tell me again about if I had a SCOM agent there. So if I had a SCOM agent there right now today, because the SCOM agent is a particular version, and right now App Insight needs a pre-release version that currently doesn't have any of those bits in the SCOM agent right now. So you manually have to uninstall the latest SCOM agent and manually install this pre-release CTP version. And then if you still connect to the Ops Manager environment, then everything works just as before. The same management packs execute. Now, if you do have APM settings are also configured for here, right now those won't continue to be reported to the management group, and just the APM data will be sent to App Insight. So you do need to choose where do you want that APM data to go. And hopefully by the end of this session, you sort of understand what these APM features look like in App Insight compared to what you know exists in SCOM. And you can then decide which one meets your requirements and needs and which one you can leverage and use. And then I'd love to hear sort of how we connect. We've got ideas on how we want to connect the App Insight data back into your management group so you do have common alerting for the alerts that are generated from this side. So those are definitely the things that we're looking at doing and sort of want to tie together. I'm going to just click on this app just a little bit, generate some load, and then we'll see it appear here. While we're waiting for that to come back, I'll switch back to slides and invite Kyle up. Kyle was one of our early adopters on the Application Insight sort of early preview program before we even were talking to a lot of external partners. Was sort of a very influential team, sort of a perfect marriage, if you will, as sort of they were building some of their new services to support some of their major launches, and we were building sort of this App Insight service. Wanted to bring him up and really share what he's been able to do in App Insight and what you can benefit from his knowledge. Kyle.
Yeah, hey everybody. I'm really happy to be here today. My name's Kyle. I'm from Microsoft Studios. We are the org at Microsoft that's responsible for publishing all the games that you get on Xbox and PC and phone. We own a lot of the franchises that you're familiar with, like Fable and Forza, like Gears of War and Halo. I'm on a central services team. We're responsible for writing services that get used across our entire portfolio. And today, Vlad and I have been working together for 6 months to a year now, really digging in on this operational piece of our services. So what we're going to do today is look at a couple of those services, look at our live dashboards. So it's all live data for you. Unpredictable things happen, but hopefully it makes some good stories. So the first one we're talking about is our CMS service. It's just dynamic configuration. We send it from the cloud to the games. The games request it. And they can create dynamic in-game experiences based on this data. We'll look at the production dashboard for that. And then the other one's our commerce service, and we use that for microtransactions within games. Microtransactions are critical to the free-to-play genre that's been developing within the gaming sphere for the last few years. And that's for selling little things in games like shields and swords and items and hats, that kind of stuff. So now that you know what I do and what I'm here for, let's dig into these dashboards.
Great. So you are on
four.
All right. So this is your live service. This is your dashboard.
This is it. This is our production dashboard for our content management service.
Looks pretty good. 100% availability. Well done.
Thank you. Availability is probably the easiest one to get 100% on. We're happy with that, but I'll dig into the tile, and we can see what it's doing. So we have two availability tests, and these are tests that are running from Azure data centers around the globe and hitting our services. The first one's a simple health service, which is just a URI ping. Every one of these green dots on the screen represents a successful call from somewhere into our service. And the second one, we stood up an instance of MS test behind an endpoint so we can reuse our functional test suite. And that's actually what's running behind this second test.
Very cool. Very cool. And right now, the locations, you've configured a bunch of locations. Can you drill into different errors?
Well, I absolutely would if there were any errors on this. I'm not bragging. I'm saying there's nothing to dig in here. But if you take a look, Xbox One released in the States and released over in Europe, and so we've picked locations including the U.S., all across the U.S., and a bunch of locations in Europe to make sure that we have good latency on our services there.
Perfect. And tomorrow's session will drive much more into availability. Earlier tomorrow, Vibor is giving a session on load tests and creating web tests, so we'll drill into that more. What do you do to understand if your apps are succeeding?
Yeah, so for that, I will switch over to our integration dashboard for our commerce service. Our commerce service right now is in beta. We have a couple titles testing on it to be released in the next couple of months. And so the traffic on this site is much lower. But at the same time, we expect to see people still using it, right? If people aren't using our site, it's not working. So even if our tests can get to it, we need to see we need to see users there, right?
So these different lines are users. These are here, games users.
Yeah, here I just did all that without showing the usage on the screen. So here you can see we have not a whole lot of RPS, but apparently we're doing some sort of test right now. And here's our users per day, and we can drill into that. We see, there's a couple trends here. One is we have somewhere between 50 and 100 users using this service. Those tend to be developers, testers, and automated agents. And the second trend that we see is developers and testers aren't working on the weekends. So apparently we just have two automated agents. And a little bit more info here. We can see the session count per user is pretty high. A majority of the people we have coming in are, well, except for today, are returning users.
Very cool. And this isn't even a prod app. This is sort of before you've even gone to production, you're doing all this in an earlier environment.
Yeah, we deploy to integration daily. So for us, it's a test bed, but as well for everybody developing their games, they're hitting the latest bits every day.
Very cool. Very cool. So that's sort of the available piece. That's sort of the succeeding piece. Now the sort of focus of this session is the performing. So you clearly don't have a usage. You didn't show any usage problems. You didn't show any availability problems. Sort of take us through the flow of how do you see what performance problems you have? Where do you start?
Yeah. So there's a couple metric values that we like to treat as canaries. They usually start triggering right away when something's going wrong. And the first one is this performance metric. Now, it might not be intuitive. Here we're running at 99.9. You know, it's not 100, but it's close, right?
Yep.
But at the same time, we have 500. Nearly 600 events.
Yep. And right now, sort of the technical definition or sort of the product definition of this number is the total number of transactions that have been successful and met the performance threshold, and your performance threshold is?
Our performance threshold is 2 seconds.
2 seconds. By default, it's 5, so you did some work to understand it's 2. So total successful over total transactions. So you're at 99.9%, which is great, but like you said, you've got over 500 failures. Yeah. So 500 transactions took over 2 seconds. Is that good or bad? How do you sort of, what's the practical implications of that?
Yeah, so you get a number like this, you start worrying, right? Nobody likes to see hundreds of failures. But we did a couple things. We've dug into this data and discovered that a majority of this number has to do with cold starts. So every time we add a new instance, it's going to be running a number of requests that are cold started on IIS, cold started on ASP.NET, on cache, on our external dependencies. And while the system warms up, these requests just take longer. And you can see here, that Avast, this is the cold start scenario, as is this. Both the first and the third ones are the cold start scenario.
And how did you sort of think about this two second timeout? Was it clearly it's global? It's not per request. You probably have some that do take a little while, some that take a little shorter. How did you come up with the 2 second?
Yeah, so you can see here we've got this performance graph, and this blue section is one of our content providers. So we call off into this content provider, and on average, we can see down here they're taking about 200 milliseconds to respond to us.
Got it.
And what we found is that 99, some percentile of our calls fall in this 2 second range. And we don't really care about deviations within that. It's only when a non-trivial number of calls step outside that range that we want to see these events captured.
Got it. And right now, typically people do ask, what's the performance overhead of the agent? Did you have to do code to add this agent or to get to these dependency numbers?
It's simple. It's what you set up earlier, right? It's you just install the agent. We run on Azure, so we have a bootstrapper, installs the agent on our Azure roles. And the agent typically runs less than 5% CPU. It's a negligible impact on our system.
And then in terms of sort of dependencies or being able to sort of pull insights out of this so that you can prioritize work, I think in the 14-day view, you sort of had an interesting occurrence of.
So let me switch back here from 24 hours to 14 hours. And as Vlad and I have been going through all the data for this talk, there are just these little interesting things pop up every once in a while. So here, if we go back about a week, you can see that the time that we spent calling our external dependency was proportional to the user load on our system. And we realized that this was a cache failure issue. We want the time we spend calling that dependency to be linear with respect to our cache policy instead of proportional to the number of users. We put that fix in a week ago. You can see right here, 31 deployments to production. It's not actually 31. It was probably three, but it counts one per instance.
And these bubbles on the bottom, sort of blue dots are deployments, green dots are some configuration change on the configuration monitoring policy, either a web test change or a rule change. So
So every time we change the system here, we have a record of it.
All this at your fingertips so that as you're debugging a problem, you can see typically the first thing people ask is what changed, right? Did the app change? Did the monitoring logic change that caused the alert to happen? Or did user load change? Did something else change? And then over here, you have the sort of view of requests per sort of bucket and a percentile view.
And you can see we're at, I don't know, 92, 97% under 100 milliseconds. And that's kind of what we expect. Our average latency is somewhere in the 20, 30 milliseconds on box, which is what we want.
So you sort of get the big picture, and then you can now drill in. You often drill into like the top 10 slowest requests. Where does where do you take that?
If we go into that, like I said, we've spent a lot of time digging into this data, and so we know what's going on. And this is how we do it. We go to a given event, say it's something that comes up. We haven't seen it before. Let's figure it out, right?
So here you see the instance name that served it, the time, sort of what the slowest node is.
Yeah, absolutely. So we can see it took about 4 seconds to make this call. If we expand it all the way down, we can see that it took about 4 seconds at our external resource. And that's really the answer we want, right?
It's not your code, it's someone else.
Yeah. We don't feel good that
It's
it's four
never your code,
seconds.
right?
But, one out of millions of calls that takes 4 seconds is something we're okay with.
It was their cold start.
Yeah.
Great. And then do you ever, what do you, what can you open up the
Yeah,
IntelliTrace?
and we can just go up to the top of this event, download the IntelliTrace in case we want to store it off for later or pass it around. Sometimes it's easier to find things by just taking the IntelliTrace file and tossing it in a bug. And you can see we open it up here, opens up in Visual Studio.
And then the thing I want to highlight here is this sort of gold bar, again, with that build info integration, as long as you build your application with a few extra parameter settings, when you open up this IntelliTrace, you get this, what we call the gold bar, that allows you to open up the direct solution, the direct change set that matches the version that's deployed in that particular instance. So if it's the integration environment, it's the dev environment, it's the prod environment, you don't have to worry about it.
No.
You just click Open Solution, and it downloads the right version so that you can continue debugging your production issue or sort of other issue, just like you were in a construction phase.
Yeah, and I totally help you out with that demo today, but I'm not positive what it's going to do not connected to CorpNet, so.
Yeah, you can open it.
Yeah. So we can look at the details, and these, as you saw before, are kind of what you're seeing in the portal. All the data that we saw there, out in Visual Studio Online is equally as usable in Visual Studio itself.
Awesome. Okay, so that's on the performance side. It looked like you had a reliability number also on there, and maybe I'll give, the textbook definition of this. Just like performance was total number of transactions that met the performance SLA over the total attempted, reliability is the total number of transactions that did not result in an exception over the total again. So here you have around 2,600 different exceptions.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of product team sort of definition of the answer, sort of how does this really work out in the real world?
Yeah, so for us, this took quite a bit more contextualization. You see 2,500 events. My percentage rate here is 96%. That it doesn't make you feel good inside, so we have to look at this number and say, what's really happening here? And so we dig in. Dig in, bring up the exception events.
So these are group by problems over the last 24 hours.
And this first one, and actually a vast majority of our events for our content service are not found responses. Because we're using Web API, we return 404s as an exception. App Insights catches that, and that, in fact, impacts the reliability number. It's not something that looks good on the charts, but it's not something we worry about either, right? Over two-thirds of our exceptions, at least today, usually it's a higher percentage, are all not found responses. And if we dig into one of those not found responses, you can see here it says, here's the item people are trying to get to. It's a not found response. And we can take this back. We know who owns every item, so we can take this back to the studios and say, hey, you seem to be having a problem with this. What's going on? How do you feel about it, usually, is the question.
Great. And then this you can open up in Visual Studio, just like the other one.
Yeah.
And how often do you take some of those and then open up sort of work items for the ones that are real exceptions that are sort of new from what you found?
Yeah, I mean, the actual answer to that is no. That's not what I do. But usually I find something in this portal or somebody else finds it, and it's a direct email to the team, and we say, hey, looks something's new going on. How about you investigate it? And
cool.
I think usually it's a link, and then somebody else puts it in a bug. I should probably be doing that myself, but maybe you called me out on it. And we can see another one of our top exception events here is an operation canceled exception, and we were surprised by this. We didn't anticipate it. It's not in our code at all.
I see.
But what we see is when Web API is writing back to the client, the client disconnects. So it's write buffered content async, sends something back, the client disconnects, and we get an exception event. It's captured by APM. It's not something we expected, and it's arguably not impacting the client, but it was interesting data. That's a theme here, is we find out more and more about everything our service is doing, even things we didn't anticipate.
Great. Awesome. Cool. So back on, do you want to switch back to the dashboard and sort of look at some of the other counters or some of the other data that?
Yeah, absolutely. So so for us, these high, low fidelity numbers are really, maybe that's not the right thing, but these numbers are interesting. They're good indicators of what's going on. But what's really important to us is we keep counters of everything we're really interested in by studio or by tenant. I mean, for us, it's for each game. We have a relative view of how they're interacting with our service. So we know, scroll up here, we know how frequently they're calling us, right? We have a couple big studio or a couple big titles calling us. But mostly everybody's, hovering on around one RPS. We have a couple titles that have a high level of integration failures. When we see this, we'll just We know who it is. We have the contacts. We dig into Visual Studio Online, get the exception details, walk to the studio and say, hey, it looks like you're having a problem. How can we help you fix this? For instance, this yellow line on the graph, it just spiked yesterday as Vlad and I were preparing the demo. And I sent an email off to these guys and said, hey, what's going on here? And it turns out they're just beginning to integrate with our service, so they're still working through some of their auth issues. And the other chart, the one that's just flat lines here at zero, this is service errors. So these are 500s and 503s, which for us, those are critical issues. Any 500, any 503, we need to know exactly what's happening. So that's unknown server error or service unavailable. Those are the response codes that the client's getting. So this is exactly what we like to see, this flat line.
Awesome. And then, so those are the counters. You sort of looked at a lot of the counters, some of the built-in ones, mm-hmm. some of the custom ones that clearly your service has authored. Do you have the ability to search your logs? Where do you go for sort of more data?
Yeah, so if we hop on over to this to our commerce dashboard, you can see we get spikes every once in a while, service errors. Like I said, those are the ones that we really care about. So we pop over to log search. We're uploading our logs using, it's fairly simple, I think. Is somebody talking about it later?
This session,
this
we're going to talk a little bit about
okay,
configuring
you are.
It. Before you switch an app, you can just stop. You can just show this here.
Oh, yeah.
We support Log4Net, Nlog, Trace Listener. It's pretty easy to configure. If you just click on one of those, you can go to a set of instructions that essentially shows you how to download the NuGet, how to configure it, what settings to change to web config, and then you do have to rebuild and deploy. And then all of those logs that you may already be using, those log providers, will be available just as Kyle's going to show right now.
So. Yeah, so we were using Trace, and it was, you know, it was that small set of steps. I did it in 30 minutes in one afternoon, and we started seeing data almost immediately. So we can come here and start to search our logs. Let's see. And when I was...
I think you said before maybe HTTP response error.
Or oh, no, I...
You got a better one?
I got this one,
oh,
yeah,
better,
yeah.
Right?
I was running through these earlier, and I wanted to make sure we weren't...
There's always technical or data that we don't want in the recording, so that's why we have to be careful.
Yeah. I did my best to ask people before I just splashed their data, you know, across tech ed.
Great. So get balance message. This is a log that...
Yeah, but what I thought was interesting about this one is it took me longer to actually write the query than it did to query hundreds of thousands of trace rows.
So 43,496 events came back with get balance message.
Yeah, and this is our integration environment in the last 24 hours.
Nice.
You know, or what we could do is if I'm looking for specific errors, you know, I can't do anything with 43,000 events, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to know, let's see, I'd like to know where I've returned a failure in the past day and that said I wasn't available, right? I'd like to know what the cause of that was.
So you got 29 of these.
Yeah, and that's an okay number. The 1,000s on here, you can see, there's 1,000s in the URL. That's our fault injection title. So we expect that to actually throw a small number of failures. The rest of it, there's the 129 title on here. And I noticed that this morning and sent somebody an email. So
great. Awesome. So you can see you have all your logs searchable. What do you do on the alerting side? What sort of alerts do you have configured? How many alerts do you get? Is it noisy? You want to show us a bit on alert? I noticed on your dashboard it had zero.
Yeah.
For the problem, so that's good.
Yeah. So we almost never come to the dashboard and discover alerts. We have everything set up via email. So as soon as you know within 1 to 5 minutes of a problem appearing, we're getting email in our inboxes. And like you asked, if it's spammy, it's not spammy. We get one raised and one resolved. And so we keep the number of rules we have for alerting fairly simple.
Cool. And do you want to show configuring one, or do you want to go to your admin?
Yeah, let's see. Nope, can't do that. You can do it from the metrics page, none of the metrics page is anonymized quite like the dashboard is. So,
do you want me to show configuring for this?
Yeah, go ahead.
So on the configuration side, on the configuration side, you see I did get a heartbeat from that agent that we were waiting for before. That happened just a few minutes after I switched. So if I go on to diagnostics and I go to our metric tab, I can choose, an app that has some data. I can choose an e-shopping app here. This is actually a Java app that's running on an Azure VM. These are metrics that are exposed by Java. I can choose something like the exception rate, and I can choose to configure alert here. And this will allow me to choose an alert if the average value over some minute is greater than or less than some threshold. I can then send a set of emails here to send the email to. I can copy this entire rule to a clipboard. We'll talk about a little bit of this at the session tomorrow. And then I can create a bunch of these rules sort of separately outside of it, and then I can upload it as a file. Are we okay showing that? Or
yeah, this is good.
Okay,
so
we can switch back to
you just show how to make one. You know, here's our rule set. We don't actually have a lot of rules. Like I said, we use the index ones most of the time as kind of those catch-all alerts, and then we have some very specific ones based on custom performance counters.
Awesome, that's great. Okay, so I think now we're gonna switch back to slides, and Kyle's gonna share sort of a few other insights that have happened to your team sort of over the past month that just didn't happen to exist in these last 2 weeks, sort of interesting cases that sort of show the value.
Yeah, absolutely.
I gotta switch it.
Let's see, are we up? There we go.
There you
Thank
go.
You. So I had a couple stories I really wanted to tell you about because you can look at dashboards and I can vouch and say, hey, absolutely, we solved everything through our dashboards. But I thought maybe a little bit more data would help you get an idea of some of the things we've been tracking down. So first, and I think one of the keys for us for App Insights is we've invested in it throughout our entire application lifecycle. And so when we took our commerce service to beta, we just ran it through load tests to see, hey, what kind of scale do we think we can hit with this? And we used Visual Studio. So we introduced two things to do that. First, we introduced Visual Studio load test. We used the cloud load test service. It was really helpful for us. And second, we... As you can see in this architecture, we have a lot running in the Azure Web Roles. But in addition to that, we have dependencies on Marketplace and Wallet and Inventory, other services in the system. And what we really wanted to do was focus on just the Web Roles in our test environment because it doesn't have the same stamp as production. Some of these dependencies don't have the same stamp as production. So we added a service emulator to really allow us to push it to its limits. And you can see here in App Insights, we ran up the load test. All the data is already coming through to App Insights because we're instrumented. And at about 150 RPS, we see this big spike of errors. In App Insights, you can dig into that over time, but we wanted a bit better granularity. So we hooked up cloud load test services. We added an App Insights application to our cloud load test services. And then as the load test runs, it's continually pulling the counter data back out of App Insights. And what we see here is at about the same level, at about 150 RPS, we start getting these failures every 4 minutes. And what it turned out to be socket exhaustion. We went back into App Insights, saw a whole new category of exception failure. It was telling us that the sockets were all used up, and this 4-minute interval turned out to be the default socket reservation time. So every 4 minutes, all the sockets would be released. It had to do with how we were using HTTP client. We were using one instance per request instead of one instance for all requests. We changed that pattern up and ran more load tests last week and did just fine.
And on the load test side, tomorrow, Vibor has a session that goes into detail on how to set up that load test, how to use the cloud load test as part of Visual Studio Online, and attach an App Insight app to that load test, the app that's being load tested, so you get all the load test metrics plus the App Insight metrics, and hopefully you solve these performance problems, mm-hmm. as Kyle did.
Yeah, so the next thing that happens, I won't assume you guys will know this, but aside from major title releases, Christmas morning is the morning for scale failures. That's the morning that everybody's playing their Xbox, which, you know, is not great if you're an engineer on Christmas morning. But So Christmas morning at 6 a.m., we get this graph right here. And our email alerts start flying, and you know, we're not happy about that. We only see the up part of the graph. We don't see the down part of the graph yet. And our service latency has increased exponentially. It was, it's frightening because you look at this graph, and the user load is not terribly higher, but service latency just skyrocketed on us, and we didn't know what was going on. I really wish I had Vlad's Zoom tool at this point, because there's one counter on there that correlates with this spike, and that is the application instance counter. We had increased our application instance count, and we noticed that, and I'm going to push this button harder or something.
Or point it over here somewhere.
Yeah. Are we there yet?
There you go.
Yes. Great. Yeah. I'm a developer. I don't use these things much. And so we figured out that the culprit actually was adding a new role instance. We use Azure Autoscale. It hit its threshold, added a new instance, and long story short, we put together a test harness on the client to do this, you know, graph, just track latency for every request and graph it with respect to time, and we realized that we get this horrible spiking mountain while the new instance is coming online. And, you know, I assume this isn't a widely known problem. I certainly didn't know what the issue was, but with a bit of investigation, we realized that that when you add an instance, Azure will cycle out a topology update to every one of your role instances and saying, hey, I'm going to add a new one. But when your instances get that update, they treat it like a configuration update and go offline briefly to, you know, to update whatever they're doing. So essentially the system says, hey, I need more resources. And quickly, Azure starts taking your resources offline one by one. And I don't want to badmouth Azure here, but we didn't know this was going to happen. And when it happened, we get a significant latency spike. So.
You mean we had servers before Christmas now?
Yeah, we set a very high minimum bar. But takeaway, all this, right? It's interesting data for this story. But the takeaway is actually, if you have a low number of instances, set your autoscale limit pretty low. So when one goes offline, the load from that one instance can balance across the other. So we lowered our autoscale triggers for just a few instances. So 60% for three. And you don't actually have a problem because you don't overwhelm the CPU is generally what the issue is. And then finally, I want to tie this back into App Insights. We use it all throughout our life cycle, from development out to production. And what we found with production is that services and production, engineering is cyclical. So we set up monitoring and alerting using the dashboards. We monitor via dashboards. We set up alerts in App Insights. When something fails, they send us emails. When we get those emails, this is an actual incident. Back in February, we started seeing a bunch of failures coming in from one of our availability tests. And you can see by the little red X's here. And we dug into that time frame, looked through a bunch of counters, and finally found one performance counter, one custom counter that corresponded to all these failures. And that counter was the latency for one of our dependencies. So the average latency for our dependency had skyrocketed at that point. And what we were doing, we're calling into this dependency synchronously. So what was happening was that because it was taking so much longer than it had previously, we'd exhausted the thread pool. All the threads were used up. We had nothing else to handle requests. So very quickly, it's tough to add more threads, but it's pretty easy to add more instances, so we just doubled the instance count. Right? We thought, all right, let's double the amount of instances we have right now, and we can make it through whatever degradation has happened in our component service. And that was an easy mitigation, but we knew that wouldn't be how we'd want to respond in the future. So what we did instead, we went back to the development board or whatever you want to call it, and we figured out how to detect degradation of this content provider in code. And when that happens, we serve from the cache, even if the items are stale. So as long as we know, we have a cache in the system anyway, and usually when it's stale, we'll go back to the content provider before serving from the cache. If we know the content provider's bad, we just continue to serve these items until we get an idea that it has restabilized. And so to bring it all around, we like to drive these improvements into our system, and we found that the best way to do this was to invest in this operational intelligence early, get it in your dev team's hands, make it easy for them to use, and generate data, and now you're generating data every time you deploy, every time you test, every time you make a change, and you can track that. And for us, it's part of our process. We treat it just like we treat testing. Every major change that goes out, we look at the metrics that it's generating. We don't want to see any surprises. We want to be able to explain any changes, good or bad. And to reiterate, this is just something that we've grown to use. It's as familiar to us now as any unit test framework or load test tool or ALM product like Visual Studio Online.
Awesome, super. Thank you, Kyle. All right, so on sort of the next up, just on the configuration side, some of the things that Kyle talked about that as he went to enable it, at the Application Insights config file is the single file that's required to set sort of all Application Insight settings. You have this performance threshold that we talked about. What defines that difference between a transaction that is a performance SLA that will be counted as a performance event? Remember, Kyle had that over 500 of those. Or sort of less than that. There's a sensitivity threshold that specifies what time frame a particular call should take, a particular call within the tree for it to be collected, which namespaces you want collected. You had to configure namespaces because of the Microsoft namespace being by default not collected.
But generally, we just want all namespaces collected.
Correct.
We've never bothered to optimize it out.
And we never mentioned this, but the difference between all exceptions or just the unhandled ones, right now you're collecting all exceptions.
No, we actually, usually we start with all exceptions.
Yep.
But at some point, once we think we've got a handle on the system, we'll switch it off because there's definitely categories of caught exceptions that we just stop caring about.
Got it. And the one area that we didn't get a chance to see in Kyle's thing, I think just because you've never had one of these memory events, mm-hmm. we have this automatic memory event capability to take a full memory snapshot, a full dump from a particular machine and automatically collect that and analyze that so that it's available if you do run out of memory, if you have a memory leak. We have the capability to set that so that it's similar to what you see from Visual Studio. We mentioned some of the log settings, the log for net and log trace listener, some of the things that we can collect there and well, what it took to onboard onto that. And all of these are links that you can click on from the PowerPoint that'll take you to the how to configure it. Build info integration, there's again a link there on just two extra parameters that you need to add to your build. To your MS build file or your command line to produce this build info file so that it, within the same directory as webconfig, there's a build info file that will be packaged with all the information around which particular change set was linked and some other detail that will enable those deployment markers within all graphs, the usage graphs, the availability graphs, performance graphs, and then also you'll get that sort of gold bar when you open up anything in IntelliTrace, either an exception, performance event, or a memory event, you'll have the ability to sort of connect to that that change set. So that's on the application and config side. Now, sort of just a quick thing on the phone side. Today, right now in phone, we don't have the ability to collect crashes. But if you have published something to the Windows Phone App Store, you do have the ability to download a stack trace data file. There is a little tool that we've got available on a blog that I've run just recently on an app here that I'll show where I ran it yesterday. And if I look at under Diagnostics, Events, and switch to this app, this is an app developer Mike Smeshnik on our team wrote. This is one of his apps that he... We download the stack trace file. I import it into my Visual Studio account here. It just gives us the ability to count and aggregate those into different buckets. And just like Kyle showed different exceptions, we have the ability to look at some of the stack, look at the different modules that were loaded, and use these to just like Kyle was able to look at the performance problems in his service, do the same thing for applications. And this will obviously grow over time and be more integrated into the Microsoft App Store, so that you don't have to sort of do this manual download Excel file and run this little tool. But that's sort of a useful tool that if you're a phone app developer today, you can use and import into an App Insight Visual Studio account and into this app container that I had. Sort of next up on the alerting and dashboard side. You can alert over most of the metrics that you can see in this metric list. Your alerts today are only available through email, and they do have active links that you can get directly to the particular app view or to the email. And then dashboards can be used to really surface all of these key performance metrics. We've seen lots of teams sort of build dashboards for sort of different managers on their team. It seems like, Kyle, you don't share your dashboards with different managers yet. Probably you don't want to give them access to the console.
I mean, these are definitely the engineering team dashboards.
That's great. And some teams do have them sort of on plasmas available in some common areas so that everybody can see what data is available and what if the app is available, performing, succeeding. We on the App Insight team have our own instance of App Insights that's monitoring App Insight. Just like every good product dog fooded its own product, every good service now dog foods its own service. It's a recursion problem sometimes, but we do use a separate environment, so we're not using the same environment to monitor production. But we can see the same sort of stuff that Kyle has, our active users, the latencies of our different components, our performance problems are available, and sort of whether we're succeeding, and those are definitely regularly viewed by sort of really everybody on the team sort of living in that data. We do run regular design research, and We run sort of different phases of sort of quick pulse studies and sort of bigger sort of usability studies, sometimes low fidelity, sometimes high fidelity. If you're interested in being part of these studies, there's a VSUX research link there. We'd love to sort of get real users with sort of real problems with lots of contextual knowledge about the service to sort of be able to sit there and try out some of these new ideas that we're trying. We'll definitely get Kyle in there one of these days. We'll get you behind that one-way mirror where we get to
Did you know that we had your whole team come down and talk to our
yes,
team?
Yes. That's right. Jeremy did come by. Sort of on the related content side, Brett's session was yesterday on the Make Data-Driven High-Impact Improvements with Application Insights. This morning, there is an Apache Cordova session that talked about how you could add App Insights. There is my session tomorrow at 1:30 on how to rapidly detect outages, where we'll go really, really deep into the availability piece, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about alerting and a little bit more about dashboarding. We'll create some dashboards. We'll show you some cool features and dashboards. And then I mentioned Vibor has this session tomorrow on cloud load-based testing, the solution that Kyle used to look for some of the performance bottlenecks and where he found that one issue. Kyle and I will be around for the next few days, mostly at the booth. We've got our emails addresses just available next. Sort of lots of track resources. I mentioned a few of these. Don't expect you to write these down or remember them. They're all in the deck. But things like our App Insight forum, our user voice is a really, really great place. There's already quite a few different feature requests added there. If you do come across something that you love, we'd love to have you post it on user voice. Different blogs, docs, demo docs, our build sessions. So really, in summary, we'd love you to sort of take away to understand that application insight is really a key piece of the entire application life cycle. It's not something that is sort of just more important in the production versions and sort of those more stable versions. It should really be thought of right from the beginning. And we're really trying to make it sort of an ambient part of the development process and something that all of the platforms that you run on expose that data that makes it, that gives you great default data so that you automatically get the right page data coming out of a browser. You automatically get the right sort of screen information from phone apps or page data from store apps that really help you succeed with your apps running on that platform. And remember, Application Insights helps if your app is available, is performing, and is succeeding. And it's a great time to try it right now with it being limited preview. I'll cut this question off because it's typically the first question we have. Right now, there is no sort of business model or charging model. We don't know what Application Insight is going to cost. A few people have expressed concern over this. It is a limited preview feature. So right now, you get to try it out as much as you can. Give us feedback as we work on our plans to get to GA and get to a service that you will know how much it costs. There is a few great opportunities to sort of stop by the Visual Studio Platform booth, where you can enter a couple of drawings to get cool new mouse and some headphones. All you have to do is install that Application Insight tool and come by the booth, and we'll show you how to hook up your first app to be communicating to the App Insight service. Lots more resources as I sort of get through the evaluation card, and you can get to the QR code and evaluate the session. And we'll sort of finish off with questions. I want to thank you very much. Here's our email addresses again in the deck. Thank you for your time. Hopefully you'll demo. You'll be happy App Insight users, just like our man, Kyle here. Thank you very much for your time, and thank you, Kyle.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
About the logging.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the hooks you had were to use SQL on there. As far as the handled exceptions, are you able to hook it up and sequence things up? We do a lot of handled exceptions.
I know if they
And right now, are you your handled exceptions are being written to SQL? You're doing your own logging. You have your own logging framework that writes them to SQL. One option could be to sort of add some code to also expose it to one of these options that we collect. Right now, we don't have that option to collect it from SQL. I think definitely over time you'll see more and more of the sort of ingestion endpoints that are different NuGet packages and are different DLLs exposed. You'll see these ingestion points exposed directly so that you could write something that does something in SQL and then sends log data into App Insight.
And there's actually something else you can do. App Insights gives you the ability to mark specific methods as exception handlers. So say you have an exception thunk or something, right, that everything's coming through, you write it out to SQL, you can actually just specify that as anything that comes through here, capture this and put it up in the portal as an exception. And it will, the tool takes care of that for you.
Great, any questions? Yep, go ahead. Oh, I don't know if you weren't at the mic, so we've got to repeat the question. The question was, is my logs go to SQL, is there any way that I can ingest those? Great question. So fantastic. The question was, what's the difference between New Relic and App Insight? Great question. So right now we're sort of mentioned a little bit how we're the sort of same APM team that was part of System Center and sort of now making App Insights as a service as part of the life cycle. And right now on the performance aspect, we definitely, there's quite a bit of overlap with the features that New Relic provides. And we are really trying to compete with a holistic solution that goes right from the availability solution all the way to some of the usage analytics pieces that maybe isn't quite the focus on either of those ends from New Relic, at least today, and really try to deliver it in one service that's really part of the application lifecycle. So from file, create new project, from sort of the ALM tooling perspective that clicking F5 within the development ID, you have this App Insight experience, and the data is helping you solve problems both in your construction phase as well as your production phase. So it's really something that we feel is important enough for Microsoft to do for developers to really be successful with their apps. So that's sort of how we're trying to compete, differentiate. Another question here?
Yeah, I had one question. As far as the usage part of it goes, I don't know that we covered too much about that. So is this only for, I mean, a lot of these things have just been websites, ASP.NET, but what about like a WPF app and have a feature toggling, you'd like to see how that's being used, that feature is being used? Is that covered under Application Insights as well?
Yeah, right now the yesterday Brett talked a little bit more about the usage session. I don't know if you attended his session. We are focused a little bit more on sort of the ASP.NET app types and the sort of phone and store types. Definitely a common question is, what about desktop apps? What about some of the other app patterns? In some cases, some of our System Center APM features cover those that we still don't cover in the App Insight case. And I think that support for different platforms will come over time as we do some of those other ingestion points as well. Any other questions? Oh, we're around all week if you think of any, and I'm just Vlad Jay at Microsoft.
And mine is Kyle MC.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.